a repeat guest for today's program, Frank Sullivan. Several years ago, we talked to Frank at length. Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen have a brand new album on Compass, If You Can't Stand the Heat. I will tell you this about the band. I believe this is a self-contained all-star band. If you've ever heard them on recordings or seen them live, this band has no limits. They do what they want to do within the context of the music that they're playing. I'm going to talk to Frank at length in the second hour about this brand new album, If You Can't Stand the Heat. Frank Sullivan, in the second hour, you're going to enjoy it. I'm really happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass, Frank Sullivan. You know, I looked up in the archives, and last time we chatted was 2014. I see you all over the place, and I'm fortunate that I get a lot of nice access, and when I focus on a band, I kind of get up on the stage and really focus in, and I know pretty much about your band. And one of the reasons we wanted to talk now is not just to catch up, but you have this new album, If You Can't Stand the Heat, which I've just been devouring nonstop.
I think it's good. I think it's catchy. People will go, what? You know, they'll get the reference to, you know, the kitchen and so on. So.
Which, we talked about that before. You spend some time in the kitchen, but I get it.
Yes, sir. I love cooking, man. I love the culinary arts.
Although Frank, I won't be able to get into chess references. I didn't realize you were that serious of a chess player until something you just posted recently made me recognize that you're way out of my league on chess.
I don't know about that, man. I've been playing chess since I was a kid and love it. Yeah, I play pretty much every day. I usually have a few games going at a time, but nothing is a substitute for, you know, playing on a board with somebody, you know, face to face. That's the best, I think. And I love it. It's a great game. The royal game of chess.
The royal game. Do you ever play the timed chess where you hit the clock and everybody sped up?
I have. Yeah, you're allowed a certain amount of time to make all of your moves. And so, you know, you use time when it's your turn, yeah. And then you hit the clock, and the other guy's time starts to make his move. So that's kind of how that goes. And then he stops his time, and your time begins when you hit the clock. And so, say you have 3 minutes, boy, by the back end of that, you're moving fast so you don't run out of time, because you'll lose if you run out of time.
That's true. Listen, I enjoy this band, and I want you to tell me, before we get into this new album, If You Can't Stand the Heat, I want you to tell me about the band members. I'm familiar with everyone in the band.
Okay.
And I will tell you this. I look at Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen as kind of a self-contained all-star band. That's the way I... Virtuoso is in every instrument and your singing and everything. And I will tell you this, too. Well, you're welcome. I mean that. I think that if someone were to listen to, let's say, this new album that we're going to talk a little bit about, seeing you live enhances... Hearing the album enhances seeing you live, because the band is capable of going. If you're in the audience listening and watching you on stage, as an audience is anticipating where you're going, you're already thinking to go somewhere else. The band has a lot of freedom to explore within these tunes, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But I really do think, get back to that feeling of mine, that the band is self-contained all-star band. Tell me a little bit about the members.
Well, thanks, man. That means a lot. You know, I think everybody in the band, minus me, is an all-star. I feel like I'm the only person I have to worry about in my band. But as far as the members go, I started this band, gosh, it's 10 years. This will be our 10-year anniversary this year, 2019. And I started out knowing I was going to leave the Navy band, and I called Mike Munford, and I said, man, I got this idea for this band, this project. I want to go out and, you know, make some tunes, play some places, you know, record some records and go out and, you know, make music. And I'd been just kind of feeling like I was playing music in the Navy band. Good job and all, but I was ready to go out and do something else, you know. So Mike was the first person. He was like, yeah, let's try this out for a while. And then we really just, you know, of course, had lots of fun playing music together before this band in a couple of different configurations, regionally or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you're in the Navy band. You're pretty much in the Maryland area. Is Mike from that part of the country also?
Yeah, he was living in Baltimore, and I was living in Alexandria, Virginia, not too far away from Virginia.
Yeah, Virginia, I meant to say. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Mid-Atlantic region, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Exactly. Now he's up in Pennsylvania, and then we had a couple other members, and then needed a bass player recently. This is starting his fourth year with the band, if you can believe it. But Jeremy Middleton, plays bass in the band, and he is an incredible upright player, but also an incredible electric player. Didn't want to leave him high and dry on this record, and also an incredible singer, so he gets to sing one on the record, too, and did an amazing job on a tune called Ricky Don't Lose That Number, you know, the Steely Dan number, right?
Steely Grass.
Right, Steely Grass. And then Chris Luquette, just a phenom on the guitar, you know, he also plays mandolin and other instruments, and just a great guy, and plays the heck out of the guitar, pretty much anything with strings on it, but he's a... Yeah, he's a beast, you know. And sometimes I think you and I were talking about this at one point, but he's a little underrated.
Absolutely.
As far as maybe just not underrated, but just not enough attention, maybe.
Right, I agree with you 100%, 100%. Now, Chris is from the Northwest, so how do you from the East Coast? As I understand it, Chris kind of grew up on the West Northwest part of the country.
Yeah, he's from the Seattle area, and we linked up in. In Seattle at a festival that was going on there, and also a couple of festivals actually, and then also in at the IBMA World of Bluegrass, we did that too, and met there and jammed and picked and had a tour coming up, and my previous guitar player had given notice, and he was wanting to go do something else, and you know, we were getting busier, and he didn't want that, so you know, I was like, oh, Chris, we got this tour up in Alaska happening, and then you know, can you come? You want to help me out? You know, here's some tunes, because he and I had already kind of, you know, talked music and hit it off musically and had fun and whatnot, and showed up, you know, in Seattle. We were playing a festival, the Seattle Folk Festival, and we met up in a hotel room and picked some tunes, and he had already kind of had his, you know, fingers wrapped around some of those tunes, and was like, all right, well, let's go do it, you know. And so after the last show of that little run ended up in Kodiak, and I said, man, the job is yours if you want it, you know, you are amazing and would love to play music with you, just let's figure it out, you know. And so that's kind of how that started there.
I would think he'd be a good guy to have in the band too, just from my knowledge of him as a person. I think he'd be a good person to have in the band.
Yeah, he's
just a good
guy.
Yeah. And, and you have a monster banjo player.
Munford.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, Mike Munford. He's a beast for sure. I mean, like I say, he's been in the band since the beginning. And, I think, you know, finally in 2013, his peers in the International Bluegrass Music Association awarded him Banjo Player of the Year, which was a long time coming, if you ask me. Because he's just...
Well, we all felt that way, too. We all felt that way, too. As I say, maybe it's the people that actually touch instruments that get it. And I happen to fiddle with a banjo, no pun intended, but I mean, I know who Mike was, and I know the respect that he has among players. It just takes a while. So then I think Chris, and I really do. I think this entire band is and I will tell people, get the album. Yes, it'll enhance your experience live. See them live, and then it'll enhance your experience on stage. And I want to talk about the album, but this band is just, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's more scripted than I think, but I see your ability as a band, and you must be very comfortable with the band to kind of, you can take, if something's going a certain direction, you can go that way, and you know it's going to come back into the form so you can end it up. But I mean, am I wrong on seeing that?
Well, you know, we leave room in our arrangements to, you know, explore soloing and, you know, have moments where everybody gets to shine and do their thing. You know, I think, but there are, you know, arrangements, but also, you know, we'll leave sections where we can have more of like a jam, you know, and kind of be more organic, especially on live shows. We do that a lot, actually. Yeah. On the record, you know, there are a few spots for that. Everybody solos and things and, you know, on there. So there is all of that. But, yeah, I think you're right, though. I think the record is kind of more of a great just sample of, you know, come on out to a show kind of thing. Yeah. And I was just talking about this the other day. It's kind of like, you know, then people hear it on the radio and, oh, they're playing here. Oh, let's go out there and check them out because, you know, and then maybe we kind of start building in a market where there might be a festival and the festival goes, oh, yeah, you know, it just kind of, they all kind of feed each other in the festival. Oh, I heard them on the radio, whatever it is, you know, on the radio. I think it's a, you know, it's a beautiful thing how it all kind of works together. You know?
And you did this in Compass Records. Did you co-produce this with Allison? Is that the way the...
Yeah. I was... Gary West, her husband, also the owner of Compass Records, suggested that we, you know, maybe get an outside producer. And I had not done that before, you know, and I was like, okay, well, and it ended up, you know, where we kind of had already gathering all the tunes and arranging and things like that, and Allison stepped in when we got to the studio with, you know, pretty much, you know, how we were going to be recording it and such, and she put her ear to it and her, you know, kind of sensibilities and, oh, what if you tried, you know, this there or that there, and, you know, there were, it was pretty much arranged already, but her, her ear was, and her sensibilities, like I say, were great to be, you know, they're kind of, and inspiring, you know, and then again, if I'm not, you know, the main producer, I don't, you know, I got to live in a van with everybody too, you know,
<That's>
or a bus or whatever,
right.
And go, you know.
Well,
he said, don't do that way. You know, we don't want that.
The first cut on the album, when we're I'm talking to Frank Sullivan about the new "If You Can't Stand the Heat" from Frank's "Dirty Kitchen," Crave. If people want to get an idea of your vocal, we've talked about the instrumentality of the band, but your vocals are so strong on Crave. That's the one that I play in the car when I want someone who isn't. We talked about this off the air a little bit. When I want someone who isn't into bluegrass to recognize the musicians and the singers so that they can get it. And you came up with a great phrase that, and I'll let you say it, but Crave is this is Frank.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're a gateway band, right.
Yeah.
You're using us as a gateway band.
That's right.
It's funny.
But Crave is a co-write with you and Becky Buller.
Yeah. Yeah, we got together at the International Bluegrass Music Association's office. They have like a conference room there. We met up in Nashville.
Yeah.
We both don't live in Nashville, but we met up there and have to be in town. We're like, let's write a song. And we both had some ideas and kind of put them together. And the song itself is kind of a little bit ambiguous as far as like subject matter. I mean, we did a video and, you know, the line in the chorus is, the more I crave, the more I lose. The more I lose, the more I crave
right.
you.
Right.
Yeah. And so we did a video in Carter Vintage Guitars in Nashville, and, you know, we related it in the video at least to, you know, expensive instruments and things that are kind of out of our reach as far as that goes. And the more I crave, the more I lose you, speaking of maybe money or whatever, or credit.
That's probably
but,
true.
Well,
your vocals are absolutely, and then I tell, jumping right off the very first tune, this is Frank stretching out vocally, and the band is there. Everybody now compliments. Everything is so easy amongst the musicians. Even when you have guests in here, and you have Michael Cleveland, you have Rob Ikes playing some nasty lap steel on
yeah.
Shiver starts off with some kind of a nasty lap steel on the ninth cut on the tune on the album. But all these great singers and extra musicians you bring in. But Crave.
Well, you know, Steve.
Yeah.
I wanted to really focus. I mean, I've never really thought of myself as like, oh, I'm a great vocalist or whatever. I mean, I sing, whatever, you know, I'm never, it's always, I always say it's like the hardest thing to do, you know, and do well and, you know, be consistent about it. But, I was having, you know, last number of years, I was having trouble with my hand and I was like, oh my gosh, I was, you know, going
oh, really?
Numb and having a bunch with my left hand, yeah, both hands actually, but my left hand worse than my right. And, ended up seeing really kind of benchmark specialists about it at the Curtis National Hand Center. They have this thing called the Musicians Clinic where people go from all over the world to go and, you know, either have surgery or have their, you know, have their digits looked at, you know, basically. I went in there and there was like a cellist and a violin player and another mandolin player for that matter. But anyway, I was afraid that, you know, I really maybe should really shine on this, you know, try to really focus in on singing my butt off on this record because, I don't know, man, my hand is kind of going downhill. And I ended up having surgery after we made the record.
Okay, how's that going? How's it going?
It's good, man. It's, gosh, I kind of feel like I probably should have done it, you know, long before. But, yeah, I mean, it just takes a little bit longer to warm up or and just, you know, there are some, you know, making sure I'm loose and whatnot is, you know, that's...
This wasn't a carpal tunnel release. Was it a nerve? What was it?
Yeah, it was carpal tunnel release.
Okay.
Surgery is what it was.
All right.
But anyway, back
yeah.
to
yeah,
it was like that kind of inspired me to go, okay, I really have to, you know. And then, you know, of course, Crave is like high sustaining notes.
Oh, man.
It's really, you know, like you really got to be super confident and get in there and get after it kind of vocal thing, you know, in some of those spots. And it's like, man, maybe I've painted myself into a corner here.
No, no, you went in, and you came out flying. You went in the corner and came out flying. It's a really grabs you vocally. I mean, that's you did it. If that was your purpose, you did it very well.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's fun to play out too. You know, we've been kind of dropping it in there here and there when I'm feeling pretty. You know, my voice is feeling good for that night because you know it's like you got to do it towards the end of the set and go, all right, so I can repair until the next day.
<that's right. laughs> We'll be here all week. I got to go. Well, and the next tune, then, Crooked Eye John. John has so many problems throughout the world of bluegrass with his eyes and being dead. And here's Crooked Eye John. That I mark as the first easily, as you pull people in with this gateway sound, they're going to know that's a bluegrass tune.
Yeah, and, you know, we invited Michael Cleveland to come in and play fiddle with us on that. And, you know, our friend Chris Jacobs from up in Baltimore wrote that tune, and he... He's an incredible singer and songwriter and guitar player for that matter. And, you know, we were like, oh, we really love that. And maybe we should try and record it. So we, you know, started throwing it back and forth and playing it a little bit and coming up with some ideas. And, gosh, it was a bear to kind of, like, sing as far as the phrasing goes because it's you know, it's a little weird as far as the phrasing of, like, where the syllables and the notes and things are for the – you know, for the structure of like each line. So that was fun. And then Chris, I texted Chris Jacobs, the writer of the song. I was like, hey man, here's my attempt at singing this song of yours. You know, I kind of had to, you know, adjust phrasing a little bit and, you know, take a couple of liberties here and there. And he goes, oh man, now I'm going to copy your phrasing. He said, cause he also thinks it's tough to get all the words out. You know, it's a mouthful.
That's a thing, Frank, that's a thing that people that don't sing don't think about. But you, not only do you have to remember all the words, you got to fit them in the right way to make it fit. And that's a difficult task that I can't even begin to relate to, but that's a difficult part of being a vocalist.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun, though. You know, you get to, you know, kind of adjust it a little bit, you know, to your style, too, you know, and how what your maybe idiosyncrasies are just, you know, as a singer or player or whatever, and but still hold true to the melody and, you know, the song itself.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Crack of Noon, I'm skipping down to the fourth one. I'll come back to my own one. Crack of Noon is just,
okay.
If you want to hear Mike Munford, this is a Mike Munford tune. And this is, and Michael Cleveland joins in on this one also, and it just becomes a battle royale, we'll say, of the instrumentalists.
Battle royale.
Yeah, you remember that, don't you?
Yeah. Well, it's a fun one. You know, we joke, and that's, you know, Mike's favorite time of day, you know, cracking news. So, so you know, I always want to have a, you know, an instrumental on the record, you know, just to, you know, it's funny, you know, it seems like instrumentals are the ones that, like, take more time to record sometimes to get it right because of, you know, there's no vocals to support. It's just, you know, it's all instrumentation.
Oh, that's true. That's true. It's a very upbeat. And before that, My Own Way is less. The tempo is not, you know, the Crack of Noon is what you would expect from a banjo player to write if he's going to write a banjo tune, instrumental
specific
tune. And My Own Way before that is not that way. It's just Rob Ikes is playing dobro. You got him playing lap steel and some other things, but that song a little bit. I don't know much about that song other than hearing it here.
Well, my cousin Megan McCormick wrote that tune, and she's a prolific writer. She lives in Nashville, and her grandmother is my dad's older sister, funny enough. So anyway, but she, the song itself, My Own Way, it's really cool because, you know, especially as of late, I've got some friends of mine with some, like, kind of not so good health news, and it's like, you really want to, you know, one of the lines in the song is, you know, about if you have some dreams, go out there and basically follow them, you know, don't stand by, you know, face your fears, you know, and quit standing in your own way, get out there and get after it, because, you know, it's like, basically there's no, like, you know, dress rehearsal for life, you know.
That's right, and that's true, that's absolutely true.
Message, you know.
And we try to have a message every once in a while. We try to get a message. Sometimes, you know, it creeps in. And even though you're a gateway bluegrass band, you still have messages that creep through every once in a while.
Yeah, you got to have a good
Yeah. Exactly. The Set in Stone is, this is the first time I see on the album a keyboard player. And also you have Rob Ikes is on lap steel playing dobro on an earlier cut. And he picks up, as I described it, as some pretty nasty lap steel on Shiver, which is the next to last. But Set in Stone, again, not one that I would immediately say, listen to this if you're looking for a bluegrass sound, but it's a great sound, and you've mixed all this in really well.
Thanks. Yeah, Set in Stone, Mike Munford, our banjo player, actually, his wife had said, check the song out, and then Mike brought it to us and was like, hey, check this out. And this is a while ago now. This is before we were even kind of like looking for songs or material, and it came back up around, and I was like, oh, yeah, man, that's great. This, you know, I looked it up online. It's this guy named Ari Hesk. It was in some television program or movie or something, really? that Mike's wife had seen. But, you know, I was like, huh, interesting. I looked it up, you know, kind of looked up who the writer was and whatnot, just kind of wanted a little bit more information on it and the publishing and whatnot. And lo and behold, our friend Sarah Siskin was the co-writer of the song.
Now, I'm familiar with Sarah's name. Am I not as being a songwriter? Do I?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah. All right, good.
Yeah, and just a prolific singer and songwriter and whatnot. Yeah, for sure. And I was like, oh, wow, that's our friend. Sweet. Even better, because it fits right into our, like, my formula for making a record, which is do songs that I've written or written with somebody or somebody in the band has written or, you know, or a friend, you know, of ours. Basically.
Well, there, you helped shortcut a question I was going to get into because I'm always curious where songs are picked from. So I think you've just answered that before I got to it. So here you have someone hearing something on the TV theme show, but it's someone that you recognize as you look into it, do a little research, and it winds up being an interesting tune to put on the album.
Yeah, and we, you know, we kind of spread it out a little bit, and if you listen to the original, like, recording that Ari Hess did, you know, we try to hold true to the song, no matter if it's a cover or what,
right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But we did spread it out on the floor and Dirty Kitchen all over it anyway.
I like that. I'm a whole new vocabulary. People don't know, we were talking beforehand, and Frank is feeding me a whole new, I'll give you credit when I use them again, but I'm learning a whole new.
Frankisms.
Frankisms, that's good. And I asked you off the air, Lena, and parenthetically Leah by permission, and you explained that right away, and that's the next tune I see coming up. That's another good song.
Yeah, well, Leon Morris and Buzz Busby, kind of like central, you know, mid-Atlantic region of late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
Like mid-Atlantic barroom, hard driving bluegrass.
Yeah, that is. That's the other unmistakably bluegrass tune that I come across so far.
Yeah, well, we wanted to kind of, you know, pay tribute to that because, you know, I've lived here for nearly 15 years now. Mike Munford's from around here, and you know the bluegrass scene is, you know, has been really strong in the mid-Atlantic.
Yeah.
Some great singers from the Seldom Scene, Emmy Lou Harris, Country Gentleman, you know, that whole deal. So, I thought, well, we can, and funny enough, we were talking about this after we recorded it, not that it was any kind of plan, but we were talking of isms just a minute ago, but that song has, like, all of the bluegrass isms.
It does.
Starts with, like, G run,
right.
Everybody comes in, there's the banjo, like, kick off, and then, you know, we got Danny Paisley
and Dudley Connell talking, yeah.
Dudley Connell singing on the choruses, doing, you know, like the mid-Atlantic sound, and that was the whole vibe, you know. And then it kind of, you know, ends up with a G-run stop, and then the banjo kicks in and does like a really fast part at the end. Then we got the long sustaining notes. I'm giving it all away.
No,
you know,
no, 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 no. They're going to have to listen. No, no.
You know, and then like the ends with a hot guitar riff, you know, after like some vocal line that we thought maybe Seldom Seen could have done even, you know. So
it's great. It's a good one. And you explained the title to me off the air.
Leon Morris is the writer. I called him up, you know, I've met Leon, we've talked before, and so I felt comfortable calling him, and he's just a sweet guy, you know. And I said, well, you know, want to record your song? Oh, sweet, man, you know. And I said, but, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, I have a question for you, and it's okay to say no, and, you know, this is not to be disrespectful, but But I'm curious if you would consider changing, having, you know, if I record it, letting me change the lyric to Leah, because that's my wife's name. Instead of singing Lena, don't be angry, Lena, don't be blue, I want to sing Leah, don't be angry, Leah, don't be blue. And he was like, oh, man, I'm easy to work with, no problem, you know. So,
and that helps you out, too.
Worked out
honey,
great.
Honey, I got a song for you.
Hey, yeah, exactly. I kind of wanted it to be a surprise, but it didn't work out that way. So, you know.
We go. Then the album goes from Lena to a total different tempo, and you got a Peter Rowan song on here, Wild Mustang, and you add in some vocals. And I've never seen this description before. When you leave all the credits and Trey Hensley's in there doing some singing, Peter Rowan, in quotation marks, summoning the spirit, close quotes, vocals. Which I think that's what he does all the time anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That was the point, you know. But he came in and, you know, we had to do some of these kind of like ethereal kind of things throughout, but ended up where it worked out at the end perfectly, and it's like a little cameo, and, you know, it's just a nice little surprise to hear Peter's voice in there, you know.
It is. It's kind of, and he's just a cool guy. But and the song is about, you know, Mustangs being initially brought here from Spain. And then in the last little, I don't know how many seconds, there's a little quote from Chick Corea in there that creeps in.
A little bit
of Spain in there.
Exactly. So the back end of the song references the first verse by Spain. You know, in the first verse it says, I'm the wild Mustang, they brought me from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end, we quote Chick Corea's Spain. And that was kind of Chris Luquette's idea to bring that in there. We kind of fit it in somehow, and it seemed to work out.
That guy, Chris, I'm telling you, the guy's got ears all over him, and you know that, but, I mean, he's just a very, very calm and talented player. Then that leads right into of course, if you're a gateway bluegrass band, you might do Steely Dan. I don't know that I've heard anyone record a Steely Dan song yet. I'm sure that they play them, but Ricky Don't Lose That Number is maybe the first or second tune that really put Steely Dan on the map, and here you have it on your album.
Well, so Jeremy, for instance, our bass player, I was like, and he sings the song on there. I said to him, man, we need to get you singing more because, man, you got such a great voice. And you know, he's like, well, what do you think about Ricky Don't Lose That Number? And I was like, well, let's try it, you know. And we kind of did more of a lift from the record, you know, from the original, you know, just to kind of like maybe, you know, but we don't have drums or piano or any of that stuff. So it's like we all kind of fill in those little spaces with our own instruments, you know, and still able to have our own sound by doing so, because that's our, version or whatever of the song, you know, our interpretation or whatever. And, man, he came in there and sang his butt off, I thought, you know, and it's just such a cool vibe to hear him playing the bass, and he does these, you know, he does the lines, all the Steely Dan lines in there, and some of his own notes, too. But it's like he it's from one end of the neck to the other on a couple of them, and he's singing at the same time. I'm like, wow, man, rock and roll.
I think I told you that's why there's no Steely Dan cover bands. There's no tribute bands traveling the country doing Steely Dan because it takes too hard. It's too hard to do it, and here you do it in a bluegrass setup.
Well, yeah, I mean, well...
You got to have skilled guys in the band to be able to pull that off. I don't care what kind of genre you're playing, and I don't care what Steely Dan tune it is. You know, their heads were clearly in a different place, and for you guys
to
pull this off...
Yeah, it's hard to fake.
Oh, man.
It's definitely hard to fake, you know, but we're trying like hell to recreate something special with it, that's for sure.
That's a blast. I love it. I say, and the next tune, Shiver, is where I think that Rob, I actually have Rob on there also,
kind of my cousin Megan wrote that one as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay, yeah, Megan. Well, she's busy, and Rob kind of kicks it off as kind of this nasty lap steel sound, and then you get into the
song. we were thinking, well, we would have, you know, maybe Dobro on it, or we thought, well, you know, he came in to overdub that part. You know, we'd already had everything else down, and I was, you know, we experimented with some different sounds and different like effects on the lap steel after. You know, the first kind of pass through it just wasn't quite right, and so we suggested a couple other things, and it's like, wow, okay, that worked.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
It
you
does
know?
Sound cool.
You know, it's not like your typical, like, you wouldn't go hear that, you know, at a really traditional bluegrass festival sound.
Nor
you know,
would you hear it in a country band in a little a little, I won't say a bar, but a nightclub. You wouldn't hear it in a country band either. That definitely comes from,
yeah,
from a bluesy, gritty kind of sound.
Yeah, and, you know, that song itself is really funky, too, because it's like it starts in 5, you know, an odd time signature, and then ends up in the choruses in 6, you know? So it's like two different time signatures, too, which is really kind of cool to go between those two things. You know, it was very clever of my cousin to do that, and she does it very seamlessly, you know, and so we were trying to go for that, too, the seamless part.
it's a great, and that leads us to the last, you co-write the opening song with Becky Buller, then you write Be Sure, which is the last tune of the 10 on the album.
Yeah, Be Sure, gosh, I was inspired by some friends of mine and some other of my own personal kind of, you know, experiences to write that song when I was a teenager, when I was about 19, I think, I finished that thing. And, you know, we tried to have a little bit of, like, maybe a Newgrass revival.
I wrote a note. Listen, you should see my notes. I put NGR just in case it came up, and I put arrows for tempo, and on that one I put NGR just to remind myself.
Yeah, you know, incredible band, Newgrass Revival for sure, you know, and when I was 9 years old, I'd seen them even before then, but given my age away here, but in 86, I was sitting in the front row at the Strawberry Music Festival, and I've told both John Cowan and Sam this, and actually have the recording of that show from the board that I sent both of those guys to. But I was sitting in the front row, and, you know, growing up around those instruments, you know, it was just normal, you know, and then I saw them play, and I was able to actually be more cognitive, and I was like, man, I've not seen those instruments do that before. I want to do that, you know?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because if I try to describe the register of your voice when you're really up high and strong, John Cowan, actually in the back of my mind, you know, who has that voice that at no time does he ever tremble. He's always just solid. And when you said that, I had made a note just as far as a reference point,
uh-huh.
But when you said that, your voice is very like, I don't mean imitation of, but as far as the strength and where is he going to go and can he make it back, your voice reminds me a lot of John Cowan. I'm just saying.
Wow, thanks, man. Yeah, he's definitely one of my heroes for sure. And he actually called me up the other day just kind of out of the blue and said, man, I got these 4 jokes. Check this out. It was right before the Christmas. And I was like, oh, man. Not that I was, like, worried or anything, but I was like, was there a point or something? Are you just calling just to chat? I just wanted to tell you this joke. So I was like, all right, man. Well, thanks so
okay.
much.
It's a great way to end the lineup on the album, and there's so many great people on this. And I know that, as I said, I've said this a couple of times, I really believe this, Frank. See the band, hear the album, they both complement each other. See the band, and they would, you will respect the recordings more, and vice versa. I'm a big fan of everybody in this band. I've always felt strongly about what you do as a band on stage and in the studio, and the new album is just further proof of that.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. That really is that means a lot, and you know, makes me feel good. And I, you know, we kind of get a little insular now and again, you know, just going down the road and making our music and going playing for people. And sometimes, you know, when we have, you know, somebody like you say something so nice, gosh, man, thank you. Really. It's hard to, you know, we're doing our thing, you know, most of the time. And, you know, it's like hard to look at it from the outside a little bit.
Your fans get it, and that fan base is going to continue to grow, I'm pretty sure. Listen, is there a website where people can find this and find out where the band's going to be? I'm sure there is.
Yeah, just, you know, if you can remember Dirty Kitchen, dirtykitchenband.com would work, or my name, Frank Sullivan, I think, would work, or Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen. But, you know, the easiest way is just to go, you know, I think dirtykitchenband.com. And, of course, on all the social media, we got stuff rolling out, you know, and shows and, you know.
Is the album released now officially? I got it a couple of weeks ago, I guess.
It is. The official date is January 25th.
Okay,
and actually,
good.
There's a bunch of pre-sale kind of, like, things going on with aprons and some patches and, you know, some signed CDs and yada, yada, yada. And the pre-sale is always good.
the artist.
Heck yeah, get a little bit of walking money before you hit the road.
Well, it actually doesn't. It's not like that. I just mean that those CDs get counted, you know. You know, it's like if not to say this is like our main goal. Of course, we want to get music out to everybody. Yeah. You know, that's the main goal, and make sure everybody is kind of like hearing it and whatnot. But people that buy it, you know, those sales get recorded, and it's it goes to what is it, Nielsen SoundScan, you know, which is in turn you know, Billboard charts.
Okay. Well, yeah. I don't know, man. This is
that always looks good on a resume.
Absolutely, and I'm thrilled to get it. And as soon as I got it, I told you on the phone the other day that when I always like what you do. When I saw Ricky, Don't Lose That Number, I thought I'm going to love this whole album, and I do. It's already gotten plenty of airplay on Unreal Bluegrass. I've been playing. Sweet. I've been sneaking it in since I got it, just because it's just that good. So this is a blast. Thanks, Frank. For taking some time to chat about it a little bit.
Thank you so much for, you know, providing an opportunity for me to flap my lips about, the things that I do, man. Thank
anytime,
you so much.
Anytime, Frank. Frank Sullivan. I've been talking to Frank. I would say Sullivan, right?
That's fine. Close enough. It's a long O.
Okay, Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen. Brand new album, If You Can't Stand the Heat, on Compass. And it's one that you want to get and put in your pocket and experience.
Compass Records, that's right. Compass Records. All right.
All right, bud.
Well, thank you so much, man.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.